Okay, we are just at 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead now and I'm going to mute all. And a little bit different than normal, you will not have the ability to unmute yourself during the presentation, so feel free to use the chat or wait until after the presentation when we'll open up microphones for Q&A session. And if I see anything that is of burning reference to something that Linda is working on at the time, I'll interrupt her. Otherwise, I'll save the questions in the chat to pose them to her after the main presentation. Let me just get some information up on here. Okay, so our speaker this evening, well known to members of the Ottawa PC User Group as the membership chair, as well as an author of the long-running newsletter series, Through the Lens, on many aspects of photography. She's given a lot of presentations, both to the OPCUG membership, as well as she has given 169 presentations through the OPCUG at the Ottawa Public Library. And tonight, Linda is going to teach us about restoring old photographs. So, Linda, take it away. And you have to unmute yourself. You have to find your Zoom controls. There we go. Okay.
I will share. I was starting to share, but I'm not sure. I'm going to stop the share because I'm not sure I got the whole screen. My hand jiggled.
I think it was sharing the whole screen.
Okay.
I was seeing your taskbar anyway, so.
Okay.
Yep, I was seeing your taskbar.
Okay. PowerPoint here. I'll just hit slideshow. So how's that look?
Yep, got it.
All right, great. Well, I know some of you have heard me talk about photo editing in this group before. I've done a few Q&A shares a couple of years ago on photo editing, but I was pleased to be asked to speak on it again in the context of restoring old photos. The links that you see there, Crystal probably put those in the chat, and they are both the link to how to download everything to get the software that I'm going to be using, but also some quick reference notes for that software to get you going. So a lot of us do end up with those boxes in our basement that might be filled with old prints, old slides, negatives, even old digital images might be on your computer way before you did any photo editing or way before we had the capacity that we have now in photo editing. And, you know, so even some of the images I'm going to show you tonight for editing are just old digital images. But for the most part, they're scanned images from prints or things like that. And so, where do you get your photo digitized to start? So that's just a picture of my mother and father on their wedding day. So here's a variety of places where you can get your photos digitized. Your first is your own. Perhaps you have a printer that will scan your prints. I have one that's not very expensive. It's probably about a $150 printer, and it does a fine job of scanning prints, especially the ones that I got given to me in a big box, because it tends to be someone in your family becomes the family archivist and gets that box, and that was me. And they're very tiny, and I'm not going to be blowing them up into big 11x14. So the scanner that I have is fine, or you might have a friend that has a printer with a scanning capability. As well, the Beaverbrook branch of the Ottawa Public Library, which is out in Kanata, used to have a media center. It still has a media center that you could go in for free, book an appointment, but go in for free and scan various things, and they would help you figure out how to use the equipment and that. Unfortunately, it's been closed for a while. I recently Googled it. I didn't see any indication that it was back open yet, but hopefully it will come back open, and I'm hoping someday they might actually have one in the East End as well. But there's also all sorts of places around town where you can get your negative slides, prints, etc. scanned. And some are in the East End here, some West End. But there's more than this. I'm just giving you some examples. And one of the links that we gave you will be to this slide deck. so you can refer to them after. So I'm just giving an example of one site or one company business that does scanning, and just to give you an idea of what they charge. They seem to be typical. So if you're talking about just loose photographs, snapshots, or whatever, it's going to be maybe up, you know, $0.74 each, which is a fair amount if you have a lot of photos to do. It's not a lot if you only have a few. The slides and negatives are more expensive. They're over $1 each until you get up to 250 of them, and then they knock it way back to $1.12. So audio, cassette tapes, that kind of thing. And then if you have 8mm Super 8 films of family events and things like that, you can get those digitized as well. So it's not cheap, but for sure I wouldn't delay on getting some of your prints digitized. If they're in color, say from the early 60s, they fade very quickly. The Kodachrome slides, if you have slides of Kodachrome, they seem to hang in. But my mom had a lot of Fuji slides, and they're completely disintegrated. They just, the colors don't look right at all. It's very hard to rescue them. You may have negatives, but they start to get these kind of oily marks and swirls on them, and you can fix that up in photo editing, but it takes a lot of work. So, you know, the longer you leave it, the harder it's going to be. And then we all had those photo albums where you put, you know, paper photos under the plastic. Well, that's fine, except some of them are fused to the plastic. So be very careful if you're pulling them off and it looks like it's going to pull part of the photo off. Just leave the plastic on and scan it with the plastic on and then fix up any kind of reflection or anything that shows that it was under plastic. You can fix that up in photo editing. And, of course, one of the main advantages of digitizing your photos is you can protect them from floods and fires and tornadoes that can completely destroy your memories if all they are is in a box in the basement. So digitize them, then put a copy onto the cloud or into someone else's house, maybe the other end of town or even another city, to keep them safe. But it does take time, so break it into small projects. A lot of times I hear that people started and it was just so long to, you know, to do each scan and they got discouraged. And it does take a lot of time. I typically will do these kind of projects in the summer when I'm not as busy, but I have to take a little bit because it is, can be frustrating. Now, you might have the type of printer or go in and maybe pay someone to let you use their printer. Somebody said stores will do this, certain businesses will let you come in and use their equipment. I have no experience with that, so I'm not going to guarantee that, but it might be possible. But what I tend to do is I break it into small projects. So like this one here, I'm just going to see if you make sure you can see it. So I'll just show my face here so I can make sure you see it. So this little book I made, and I just covered the period 1945 to 1965. I had another one where I was covering the period from the late 1800s to 1945. And then inside, what I've done is I scan and put them into these books, but I try and make the photos no bigger than the original, because those little snapshots that your family took, unless it was done by a professional, they're not going to blow up really well unless you upsize them through AI and things like that, and we'll get into it. But the one I used for the cover, where I wanted a little bigger, is the, you know, a shot that I know was taken by a professional, and that usually works out okay. So what are we going to use for the photo editing? I'm going to use, again, the Photoscape X that I showed you guys before, and the reason I'm still using it after 10 years is, number one, for a free software that you download to your machine, so you're not up there on the internet all the time using it. It's on your machine. It's free, but it's also quite comprehensive. So Windows Photos comes with any, you know, Windows environment. You have free photo editing software with Windows Photos, but it's not anywhere near as good, and you'll probably get frustrated pretty fast. So I don't recommend learning that fast, because then you just have to learn another piece of software. There's lots of other photo editing programs that are out there that are even more sophisticated than Photoscape X, but a lot of times you have to pay every month. So while I have the paid version of Photoscape X, I bought it 10 years ago for about $60, and that's all that I've had to do. They never bug me for more. They're not upgrading them or anything like that. So I like that it's just static and I'm not paying for something every month as you would with a Lightroom or Adobe, that, or Photoshop, that kind of thing. They're charging every month now. So first of all, first and foremost, make sure you have copies of your originals. Once you've scanned them, put them in a separate folder and do not have that at the area where you're playing around with them. You've done a lot of work to scan them. Don't risk copying over and making them something you didn't want. And then I'm going to show you how to do this, but when you open the program, click on the Editor tab. It will default to clicking on the Viewer tab, and it's next to useless because by the time you want to do something with a photo, it takes you to the Editor tab anyway, and I find it harder to find the photos there. So just click on the Editor tab to start, and then you drag your photo into the work area. So the paid version, I have it marked as 70, but somebody told me in a lecture a couple weeks ago it's actually $60 right now. It comes and goes up and down. It includes the clone brush, which I will show you tonight, and most people decide it's well worth the $60. It's a one-time purchase, but that's up to you to decide. It seems, that might change too, but it seems that the paid version, funnily enough, is not available for the Mac environment. But it's fine for Windows 10, 11, and you can put it on 6 computers if you have the paid version. Obviously, a free version, you can put on as many as you want. So I actually travel with this because I like to have my laptop with me when I'm traveling, and then if, you know, weather's bad or I'm tired at night, I'll start doing some photo editing. So here's an example. I was helping a friend of mine. Oh, I probably edited about 100 photos for him from his family. And this was taken in 1919. So you can see it's crooked. The sky is bad. And I probably spent maybe 15 minutes on this photo in Photoscapex. And yeah, it's not perfect, but now you can see the gentleman on the deck. The sky looks way better. I could touch it up even more. But for 15 minutes worth of work, that's not too bad. Now, this is one we're going to work on tonight. I've got a copy of this. We'll play around with it. So this was in from 1896, Kate Suter. And then this is what I ended up with, just using the Photoscapex tools. This one, I wasn't sure I would be able to rescue anything. But I just brought out the shadows, lightened the shadows, and now you can see the family on the veranda, and it's way nicer. So from 1908, great to have such a great family photo. This was another one that was late 1800s, and you can see it's kind of rough in certain places. And when you zoom in, you can see that she's actually missing her left eyeball. So, but what I did was I gave her a new eyeball, and then, but because it's not perfect, but, I'm not cropping it like this. It's just to show you what it looked like. So there's the before, and there's the after. So, yes, I could do even more work on the cloth and the fabric and things like that, but I was happy with at least the faces on that one. So here's Kate Suter. I'm a little older. So that was the original scan. That's what I did using Photoscapex. And then I brought it into On1 Photo Raw, which is slightly more sophisticated software, a little more expensive, but I used it as well. So, yeah, probably did a slightly better job, but for free it wasn't too bad. Now, this was one that I thought, oh, this is going to take time, and it did. And I basically used the spot remover and got rid of those spots. But you can imagine it took me a few minutes, put on some tunes, and probably spent a good 20, 25 minutes on getting rid of all those spots. So did this. But now, of course, this was about 11 years ago, and I didn't have the chance to use AI. So I just threw it up to AI the other day because I just knew AI would do a really easy job getting rid of those spots. And it did. Now, not all your photos that you want to restore are people photos. This was an interesting shot from Trail BC in 1950. And while I like this bus over here, I just gave it up because I really was interested in that kid. I wanted to home in on the kid that he's standing so close to this moving train, and there's no barricades or anything. And you can just tell he's just dying to get on there with the engineer, I'm sure. So, of course, I leave the power lines in and everything, but I took out the scratches and the marks and dots and things like that. So it's not always just a people photos. And this is just to show, this is a recent one, but this is just to show you that in Photoscapex, all I did was adjust the light. I did not saturate this image. I was just adding contrast, lightening the shadows, darkening the highlights, that kind of thing. So there's lots that you can do, but try not to use that saturation button if you're working with old colored photos, because they can look pretty unnatural pretty soon. So this is the one that Alan said he was going to have me do, and it was the first I'd heard of it last week. But this is what I got when I put it in AI, and it was pretty amazing, the job that it did in AI. So you can see that the world has changed when it comes to photo editing. But the main issue with AI is that while it does an absolutely fantastic job, and way better than anything I could have done in any software, you don't always get the faces looking like the people you know. So I don't know any of these people, so it looks absolutely fantastic to me, but it's just, yeah, if they're your family members, I've used AI for photos of my sisters, and they don't look like my sisters. They look nice. They're better photos, but they don't look like my sisters. So this
quick question, Linda, yeah. Just on here. Well, which AI software did you use for that last one?
Gemini. Google Gemini.
Okay.
Yeah, I typically use either the Google Gemini. I wrote down the two I used, but I can't quite see. What's the other one? The ChatGPT, of course, but and I think I used Perplexity once on one of the images too, but I've tended to go back to Gemini. I find I like how they treat things, but you know, it's totally up to you, and obviously you can use different ones for different types of images. You may find it works well for some and better for other types of adjustments that you may have. One might do a really good job with spots, and one might do a better job with something else. So this was one Gail Egan gave me, one from her use, so I appreciate that. Thank you, Gail. And so this was just doing spot removal. This was in Photoscape X. I didn't put this in AI. Just doing spot removal, contrast, denoise, sharpening, that kind of thing. So much better. But then I thought, well, let's try it with Copilot. It's the other one I do use, Copilot, Microsoft Copilot. So I put it in Copilot, and it decided to put it in color. I did not ask it to put it in color, and it gave her blue eyes, which is good because her eyes are blue. But how did they know? Did they go by the hair? Whatever. So they guessed right. And then I put it in Gemini as well, and I found they did a better job of having her it look like Gail. It looked more to me like the face in the original photo. But what I want to show you tonight is, by all means, try AI. But if it doesn't look like what you hoped, I want to show you how you can do it yourself. Maybe not quite as great, but at least the person looks like the person you know. So here's one of my aunt and my sister and myself. I used Copilot for this one. They did a fabulous job on my aunt. They gave my sister this massive, great big caterpillar eyebrow here, and that face is not my face. I know what I look like at that age. I have other photos, and that is not what I look like. But if anybody else is looking at it, it's not too bad. I just cleaned up my sister's eyebrow, and it's a nice enough photo. And it was a really nice photo of my aunt, so I gave it to her son, who's my cousin, and so now he's got a great picture of his mother, but it's not a great picture of me. Now, this came from Diane Laporte, who's a new member with OPCUG, and she sent me this picture. And honestly, if I'd done anything in Photoscape X, it would not have been very impressive. I'm sure there wasn't much I could do with this image, but I put it up to Gemini, and it's just unbelievable what they did. Again, I have no idea if that's what her face looked like, but if you don't know and you're just trying to show the history of your family, and I didn't straighten it because I didn't want to get rid of the house, the homestead in the back, so I kept that in. But it's just absolutely breathtaking what can be done with AI. Here's another one that she gave me. It was labeled Irene at the bottom. I did not ask Gemini to actually put a frame around it, but it did, and it put the name in with a wonderful font. So, and it upsized it. So my original was 238 by 233 pixels, and it upsized it to 1046 by 1024. So that means you've got all sorts of ability to, you know, even crop it from there if you want. So unbelievable.
We have a question while we're on this section from Carol. What instructions did you give AI?
Very little. I just said, make this photo clearer, or, and sometimes I'll just say, improve this photo. That's all I say. And with the guy with the spots, I said, take the spots out. But for this photo, I just said, make this photo better. That's all. So if you're working on any kind of portraits of your own photos and that, there's some suggestions for fine-tuning. So one of the things you can do is make the eye sparkle. So you can just zoom in on the eyes. This is me about just as I was entering university. So you make sparkle, you can zoom in and make your eyes sharper and whiten the whites of the eyes, and that makes them pop a bit. You can remove some, all if you want, reflections off glasses. You can adjust skin tones, saturate lips. A lot of our old photos that are color get very faded. You can obviously remove scratches and lines and spots, acne blemishes. I like to whiten the teeth a little bit sometimes. And think about shifting to black and white. Even if the image was originally in color, with people photos, black and white sometimes works better because it's so much about the faces and not so much about, you know, a bright t-shirt or something like that. And then if there is graininess in the image, you can use a blur or noise reduction kind of function. And you can correct for color cast if it scans in a weird way, especially slides or something like that. So the other thing you consider, and hopefully we'll have time tonight to show you, is making a collage. So as I say, keeping those images fairly small, but maybe putting three together and then printing it on an 8x10 photo paper, putting it in a frame, and say you've got, you know, three nice pictures of a grandparent or something like that. And you can do that in Photoscape X. There's two different ways to do that. And then as I showed you, making a hard copy photo book, it allows you to keep those images small. They look nice on the page. You can label them. You can put in a family tree if you want, all sorts of references or even little keepsakes in a pocket. And there are all sorts of places where you can have a makeup photo book. Just some suggestions there. And it's a great gift. So I made these three books, three different periods in my family history. So I have three different books, and I sent them three different years as Christmas gifts. Well, you can imagine how well received they were, because I had most of the images. So now all my relatives have the same images that were in my basement, and they didn't have to put them together. So it's just a very thin, tiny book, sits on their shelf, and it's a good collection of our family history. Okay, just a quick plug for the Orleans Photo Club. If anybody wants to chat with me, I'm the communications, the competitions director there. And Chris is temporarily still on the exec, but he's stepping down from being vice president. But still a very active member, and you can ask me anything about it or go to the website. Okay, so I'm going to go on to the demonstration. And Chris, are there any questions I should do before the demonstration?
No, but while you're setting up on that, I'll just comment on a couple of things from the start, and then we'll leave the rest till later. There was some information. Jose Costa said you can also scan at the copier printer machines at any branch of the OPL. So you just bring your own memory stick and save the scans there. So
okay,
that's
kind of
neat. You can do that. And then Natalie said she went to the GPC LabWorks a few years ago. She said it wasn't cheap, but they were great results.
Okay.
That was one of the ones you had as a URL there.
Yeah, that's a good point, that all the libraries would have normal type of printers with scanning ability. It was just Beaverbrook had the ones where you could do the 8mm film and things like that.
It was a much higher end scanner that they have as well at the Beaverbrook branch. It's a real high res scanner.
Yeah. Okay, but very good. I will make sure I mention that. Okay, so I've just opened up the Photoscape X. It's the pro version, but everything I'm going to show you tonight, other than the clone brush, is available in the free version. If you have the Cameo, like the little, what do you call it, Chris, the gallery, if you have galleries on the right-hand side showing, click on it and drag it over, because most of the tools I'm going to show you are going to be on the right-hand side of your screen. But it might be okay, just depends how your computer's set up. I think it's okay for the people watching more than the speaker.
Yeah, I will point out that the way things are viewed by you is up to you. We don't control that. So just as an example, I have the film strip going across the top, and it's completely away from Linda's screen. And so you should be able to go in the view and arrange it so you can see her screen entirely.
Okay. All right, great. All right. So as I said, I was going to open it in editor mode. The kind of cool thing, but it will default to viewer, but I just don't find it that useful. But I open it in editor, and then these are all, this is my file folder system. It's not under my pictures folder because I have it under documents because it was under OBZUG. But obviously, you know, you can just go down to your pictures folder, find the folder that you want to play around with. The other thing that's kind of cool is if you click on this icon on the logo, it brings up these little videos that you can watch on the various tools within this program. You have to be connected to the internet, but it does give you that option. Okay, and then these are just the photos within this folder. You can change the size by the gear. You can sort them by name, date, whatever, but I won't take too much time on that. So we're just going to drag our first image in, and as soon as I drag it in, this home page sort of pops up. So it's giving you very common rules, like things that you might want to do, like cropping or straightening or resizing or whatever it may be. So they put a few right on that homepage. The color tab is a little misleading. It's color and light adjustments. So all your color and light adjustments are here, not here. That's flares and special effects. So that's the two main tabs we're going to use, as well as this tool tab. Okay, so let's, but one of the things I'll point out before I go any further is as soon as we went into the color tab, this histogram popped up, and that's so handy. If it doesn't, and it looks like this, just click on it and it will open it up. But it's a distribution of your pixels from a pure black on the left and pure white on the right and gray or color in the middle. So we can use that when we're adjusting for contrast. So I just wanted to point that out. So on this image, the first thing I want to do is get rid of some of those dots, okay, in the back. So we're going to click on the tools, and there's a spot healing brush. So I'm going to click on that, and then I'm going to zoom in to the image. And as soon as I start zooming in with this slider bar at the bottom, you can see this little navigation panel pops up. And the best thing to do is move it from here. You may find that you can move it from here, but some functions, no. See, it's actually going to drag and make a spot. So don't count on being able to just drag the photo. It won't give you that little hand unless you're over here. So drag it here. So now we're going to choose the size of the little brush we want. So that's a good enough size. It doesn't have to be a circle. I like that. In Windows Photo, it has to be a circle. But here I can drag it and take away certain things. It's going to look around the area. So it doesn't always do exactly what you want. It's looking around and finding what pixels are in that area that it could use to replace what I'm telling it I want to replace. Okay, so you just putter away at that. When you getting close to a face, I try and keep that brush as small as possible. Let's just see what works a bit for this one. I'll get this one away. When it's close to hair or other features, but especially if it's close to an eyebrow or lips or something like that, it can really change an expression quickly if you're taking out dots. So sometimes I'm very careful about whether or not I remove dots. Like this lip, we'll see. Not too bad, but sometimes it can distort it a little bit. So just be careful on that. And that's where the clone brush gives you so much more power, because you can control exactly what gets copied over. With the spot healing, you're kind of letting it make the decision as to what it thinks is in the area that's appropriate. Okay, so now we're just going to scroll down. I'm not going to do everything. Obviously, it would take me a while to fix everything. Oh, there's a little spot. We'll get rid of that. But we're going to go down here, and you can see that there's a scratch here. So I'm just going to drag this in this area, and then it's going to look in that whole area, and it's going to have no trouble. I probably should have chosen just a slightly bigger brush. So I'm going to do that again. And then down here, I'm going to drag it, but I just like to stay in the section where it has no trouble finding the background. This time it's going to have a bit of trouble with the background because it's not plain. But, you know, our eye isn't going to go there, so it doesn't have to be perfect. Chances of us looking down in there and saying, oh, that was a little weird, are, you know, slim to none. So that's all you do is just, you know, fill around and fix what you want. Now we're going to go over to the shoe here, and I want our shoes, so I'm going to get rid of this. And then just try and work my way up here. Maybe that's as far as I can zoom in. So, as I say, it can be a little frustrating with the spot healing brush, and sometimes it just does an absolutely perfect job. Okay, so here's the kind of area. Like, obviously, I'm going to need some space over there because I want to keep her foot in. So this is the kind of cleanup that would be brutal with the spot healing, because you can see sometimes it looks in the area and finds what I want, and sometimes it chooses something I don't particularly want. So this is where this clone brush can be much easier. So the clone brush, just to zoom out again so you get the idea, it's not like the spot healing brush. It's not looking around and seeing what kind of pixels are there. It's just taking this. You anchor that with the left click. I'm not pressing down on my mouse and just pulling the mouse over. You left click again and you drag. It's an exact clone, okay? It's not thinking, it's just making an exact clone. So we don't want that, but we'll take that away. But it's very handy. Now, I had that on 65% strength because the last time I used it. Let's put it on 100% strength so you see. So it does 100% strength, and then that the fact you can change the strength is really great if you're coughing from a kind of darker area to a lighter area. You can still clone, but you can lighten how much strength is put into it. So I'm going to zoom in again, and we're going to go over to this area. So I'm going to hit escape, and then we're going to plunk it here, maybe slightly smaller brush. I'm going to plunk it here, and then I'm going to drag it over here, left click, and then just paint. Now, I don't like how it has a rough edge like that, and I'm glad it did it because this program defaults to hardness of 100. So if I pull it back there, it will give me a much softer edge. Okay, and this is where, as I say, you can choose the strength that you want. If you find it's, you know, an area that's too light or too dark or whatever, but it's just a lot faster job to clean up a big area like this, and it's a background, so it's not critical that it's a model background anyway. You can always blur it later if you wish, so just much, much faster. And then I'll give you other examples, but really makes your life easy. And then just line it up if you're copying over places that have a horizontal line there. Okay, so let's zoom back out again. And obviously it would take you a while to do all of that. But I want to show you one more thing on this. First of all, we can, let's go back, let's apply this. We'll go back to the home page or and just do a crop. So we're just going to crop in now that I can be close to her feet. I think I got enough room in here to catch her feet. And I'm just going to, I'm not doing a particular size. You could, if you were going to print it, you'd have to print a certain size. I'm just going to pull it to the size I want. So this is just completely free form, as you can see on the top. But you can select whatever size you want if you're going to print it. So click yes. Okay, and then the other thing I wanted to show you on this image is when we zoom in here, you can see that we're losing a bit of detail on her top, her dress, because it's a little bit too white. So we're going to go into color, and I'm going to darken just the highlights. I don't want to darken the whole image because that's not going to help me. So I just want to darken the highlights and see what happens. Now, that did a pretty good job. We'll do a compare. And you can see now a little more detail in that dress. However, I might not have wanted the whole thing, all the highlights, darkened. So you can always just mask this area. And that's what I love about this program is every tool you go into, you have the ability to mask pretty much everyone. So I'm going to mask with a pretty big brush here. I'm just going to mask just the dress. So all we're going to do is darken highlights on the dress. I didn't really want to darken the highlights on her face. Her skin was you know, nice light tone and representative of her other images that I saw of her. So I'm just going to darken this area of the dress. You don't have to do it too, but now, because we've just done the dress, we can just do a straight darken. We don't have to worry about highlights. So I'm going to darken that completely, and now you can see that you can see a little bit of the fabric in that. Okay? So obviously I would fine-tune for a while and go back to a face and fix it up a little bit more. Would AI do a great job? Probably it would, but it might not end up looking like her. That's the only kicker. Okay, so let's go on to another image. And this one is one that I want to talk about using contrast. So here's an image that's faded over time. It's taken in the late 60s, and it's kind of just, yeah, just over time, it's lost some of its color. Now, again, AI might do a good job, but I want to adjust this one myself. So I'm going to go into color because I want to adjust the contrast. And you can see by the histogram, there's no pure black over here. There's no pure white. It's all this mushy kind of mid-tone. And that's why it looks so flat. And even with images that it might have been digital, more and more the DSLRs and mirrorless and things like that, traditional cameras like that, they are making the JPEGs not overprocessed. Your cell phone will overprocess. It will add sharpness and color and saturation and all sorts of things. But if you buy a traditional camera, they kind of know you'd rather have that control yourself, so they come out kind of flat. And so this is similar to something you may get out of if you've got a DSLR, it may look similar to this in that you get to adjust that contrast. So the contrast is just going to add both sides. It's going to add more white and it's going to add more black. So let's just drag that over. And you can see it's already bringing out color, even though all I'm doing is adding black and white. But if I go any further, there's already one color channel that's up on the right there. You don't want to add too much or it's going to have too much white. So that's fine. I can stop there, but I'm going to say, but I still need some more black, so no problem. You just click more, and now you can adjust the color. So I tend not to use contrast. I tend to just go into this and drag the blacks and whites over the way I want. So I want a little more black, so I'm going to drag that to the left, and you can watch the histogram. It's going to hit that wall, and then I'll probably stop. So now you can see, yes, dark blue jeans, much more representative. My hair was a darker auburn then, it's lighter now, but and so that's more representative of the colors that were in the original picture. So let's just say yes to this, and then we'll zoom in. And this is the kind of picture that wouldn't take me long to do. So you see there's a couple of dots there. I take them out with the spot remover, and then I would just maybe add a bit of clarity. And there's a clarity tool under the color. And there is a sharpen tool under adjustments. So these are all the adjustments you have. There's a ton of adjustments. And there's the sharpen and the blur. That's probably the only two we're going to get to today. There's color fill. There's point color. There's all sorts of things. And again, these are all in the free version. And then there's various effects as well. A lot of what putting in a kaleidoscope or something like that. There's all sorts of fun effects. And transformations, so again, for free software to have perspective control, it's great. And you can actually have lens, put in a lens correction, a lens profile, your particular lens, etc. So let's go into the color. So there's this clarity bar here. So let's pull in and see, because it's probably the faces that we really want clarity, so we could just mask them if we wanted. But you see, it's just sharpening everything in the image a little bit, just to pop it out a little bit. So let's apply that and see what it looks like. That looks not too bad. And so then, as I say, I would take a couple of those spots out. So let's do that. Oh, that's a big brush. Take out that spot for sure. And some of this garbage up here, whatever. And now we're going to crop it. Now, when you're cropping and people are looking that way, always give them space to look. Don't try not to center them, but do give them space to look. So I would probably just do that.
And we have a comment in the chat about adjusting the white balance, the image looking maybe a little too magenta. Maybe you could demonstrate that.
Yeah. So we can adjust the temperature here. Make it like that. Or we can add a little bit more blue.
And it might be the tint as well.
And the tint
as well.
Moving
it a little towards the green.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's various ways you can identify. Yeah, because these colors might originally not have been very good, some of the old types of color photos. So by all means, play around with the color cast and get it to the way you like. And we were hiked up Thunder's Mate near sort of close to Morton, the town of Morton near Westport. And yeah, to this day, I can't figure out how I hiked up in my penny loafers, but there you go. Okay, so let's go on to the next image, because this is one where it isn't people. I'm not going to say that. So this is just an example of an image you might want to save, but when we look up at the sky, it's a little mottled, okay? But it's not really grainy like you would use noise adjustment for. It's just kind of mottled, so I would use a blur. That's just me personally. You could try the noise, but I think a blur would do a better job. So we're going to go into adjustments. We're going to click on the blur, which is this guy here. And I'm going to do a mask, because I don't want the whole image blurred, obviously. I just want the sky blurred. So we've got a nice big brush there. I'm just going to blur part of it so you can see next to it, which is the before and after type thing. Although in this program, it's always nice that you can always see a before and after. So let me blur this. Okay, let's blur. I'll copy a little bit more. It's already got it on the halfway mark. You can see this radius is the amount of blur. So let's blur it a lot. So there's the blur. And then you can use this compare button down here and click compare. So there's the before and there's the after. So it's absolutely perfect for a sky. You don't need all those models. And even it'll probably even hang on to some of that white cloud that was in the sky. Maybe not. No, it's taking a bit of that out. But if that's important, just pare it back a little bit or, you know, adjust different areas, different blurs in different areas. So that's kind of a nice handy one to have for landscapes and things like that, or to blur a background with a person. So I'll show you an example of that. I might have showed it in my talk years ago. But let's bring this one in. It's an old photo when I was working. And we want to blur the background so you can't read these books, which would be nice. So this is in my office, obviously. So I want the blur function. And as I say, it automatically starts it. So let's pull it back. No blur there. And I'm going to just mask my face. I'm not going to be too careful. You might want to be a little more careful, but I just want to show you it doesn't take that long. So, and again, it's something you could put in AI and probably say blur the background and it would probably do an okay job, but it doesn't necessarily give it exactly as you want, and then you'd have to ask them again and may or may not listen to you. So, okay, so let's blur it. All right, just for fun, let's blur it. Okay, so it's blurring, but that's not the way I want it. Obviously, I want the background blurred. So we're just going to put it halfway here, and I'm going to invert the mask. So now the mask is in the back, and they call it a mask, but it really is an area that you're doing an effect on. It's the area you want to have an adjustment on. So I'm going to blur it a little bit more, but I don't want it too much because it starts to look fake. But I want it enough that you can't read the titles. I don't mind you can see the books, but you can't. I don't want you to be able to read the titles. So here's our compare. There's the before, and there's the after. So if you're using these blur functions, I would suggest being subtle. And, of course, I would mask my top so it wasn't all blurred, but I just didn't want to take the time to do that. Okay, so let's go on to another image. This one here. Okay, so this is a case where this is obviously a more modern photo, but I wanted to show you how you can adjust for faces. So there's various things I want to adjust here. My sister was very sunburned that day. She didn't wear sunblock, and she's very pale. She's got glasses. I want to take some of those spots off her glasses. Her teeth were kind of a little dark, so I wanted to lighten her teeth a little bit. And yeah, we'll play around with her lips so you can see how you can saturate if you wish. I don't have any lips, so I can't play around with them. So we'll use my sister's lips. And I want to show you how the clone brush can work in this image as well to your advantage. So, and at the end, you may decide to put it in black and white. That's up to you because of the bright colors. Okay, so let's zoom in on my sister a little bit, and I'm just going to just soften that sunburn look a little bit. So I'm going to mask it. And it's not going to be a huge amount that I'm adjusting, so I don't have to be super, super careful because I'm only going to do it a little bit. So we're just going to brighten it a titch. See, just like that. So there's the before and there's the after. So it's not super, super intense, but just a little taking off the burnt look. Okay, now I'm going to take away some of those dots on our glasses. So I'm just going to drag this over, and I'm going to use the spot removal healing brush for that. But as I say, be careful if you're near eyes. And I don't mind having a little bit of the reflection in there. And I'm going to take ones off that aren't near her pupil because the pupil is so tied into expression. So be careful. But again, you could use the clone brush. So over here, you could clone a little bit of this eyelid over here instead of using the spot removal and just guessing what it's going to do. But it did a pretty good job. Okay. So that's the glasses done, so that didn't take long. Now I'm going to go into the color, and I'm going to brighten her teeth just a little bit. Drag over again. And it's going to be a mess because I don't want everything else white. And I'll make a fairly small brush, and I'm just going to drag, click and drag, and just paint her teeth here a little bit. And then I'm just going to brighten it a titch. Just something like that. Okay, so that looks nice. You always have to hit apply if you're going to do another function. It sort of takes you out. That's a bit of a pain because I want to do another function in color, but I want a different mask, so I'll have to go back in. But that's fun. So now I want to mask her lips just to show you if you have a photo that's come out a little unsaturated and you want to bump color up. I'll just show you how you can just do a mask and look. Click on the mask and just paint the lips. All right, so we're just going to add a little bit of saturation on these. Very rare I use saturation, but in this case, just a titch. So there, it's just like she's just put a little bit of lipstick on. That's all. Now, obviously, if you exaggerate it, it's going to look funny. So just use your judgment on that one. Okay, now what I wanted to show you in this one is how to get rid of, our eye goes to, well, it goes to the printed word and it goes to anything bright white. So our eye is going to go there in the middle at some point and away from the faces. So I'm just going to show you how we can get rid of that with the clone brush very easily. It would be a brutal task to do with the spot healing brush. You wouldn't know what to copy. So I'm just going to hit that clone brush. And I'm going to make sure the hardness is zero. The strength is 100%. And I'm just going to choose a brush size. But I just want you to realize what happens. So I've locked it there. I'm moving it over. Now I'm going to click and drag. And that's fine. And it's covering it up nicely. If I go over here, it doesn't remember that, it hasn't registered that I've changed it. So it's copying what was underneath where the left circle was. So you have to hit apply, and then it takes that as the new color, and now I can drag that over. So same with here. I can only go so far, and then until I hit apply, it's still remembering what was underneath. So now we hit apply, and I copy that. And it's just so helpful for all sorts of clutter and crap in the background that you might want to get rid of. It just takes away from the people. And typically, it's all about the people. Or it's more about the people than anything else. So I'm just going to just show you how fast it is. And honestly, for $50 that I spent 10 years ago, a good deal. All right, so yeah, you can fuss away and make that better, but you can see our eye doesn't go there now. You can also use it just to get rid of things. So let's say we went up here and we just wanted to get rid of this, whatever it is, plaque. So I can actually clone from here, and we'll just do a little pretend thing here. It might not work out perfectly, but you just clone an area and put in some new wallpaper, okay? So That's all I have to do. Now you'd have to line it up carefully and make sure everything's looking hunky-dory. But you get the idea. You can get rid of that. And that's another background you could blur as well. Okay. Now what I want to do is show you some interesting tools. Let's do this one. Okay. Here's me a few years ago in the Boutard Garden. So it's very harsh lighting. The sun's coming in. And so I'm going to show you how I can sort of soften lines. And we all like that. So we're going to click on tools. And we're going to go to soften skin. So I'm going to just zoom in. And all you have to do, it's on full strength. And I've got a brush size selected there, maybe just make it a little smaller. Is just drag across. Just drag across where the wrinkles are, and it will very slightly change them. Okay, you can apply it and go in again and do it if you wish. Okay, now when we apply, that doesn't mean it saved the file. You would have to actually do a save at this point. And you can do Control-S, and it will overwrite the file you have. Or you can do Save As and save it under a different name. And I think I just want to see if I had another version of that. Okay, I don't. Okay, so then what I want to do in this image is say I want to blur that background. It's quite cluttered. It's quite sharp, and it takes a little bit away from my face. Because it's so busy. So let's see how we can do that. But before I do it on this image, I'm going to show you how we can do it simply on another image, because this image is going to be a little bit tricky. So we're going to go into Cutout. And Cutout is a feature that allows me to cut out, you have to drag it in again, a background and make like a PNG file where there's a transparent background. So this magic eraser, you can see as I hover over it, it's showing the colors that it's going to erase. And you have an ability to adjust tolerance. So I'm going to say, okay, it's saying, okay, it was kind of pretty much sort of that color. And you can see it covered up some of my mother's hair. I can reduce the tolerance. That's fine. Or I can keep it the way it was and I can fix up her hair after. So let's just click on these items. They're not going to pick up they didn't pick up a purple shirt, but they picked up a little of the light that was hitting the shirt, and it ended up yellow. So that didn't take long, and I can just fix this up easily with the brush. So I go to the brush tool, and what I'm going to do is I have to put on negative because we want to take out the masking there and just touch up her hair, however that will be, put her hair back in, and any of mine that I want back in, and then fix any of these that it didn't do a very good job on. I usually check, because sometimes there's just certain streaks like this that for whatever reason it didn't pick up those yellows. And then I'm going to do the negative again and take it off the top of her shirt. So now we have an image with a transparent background. So I'm going to save this. And when you do this save, don't know why, it's going to put it in not the place that I was. It puts it in the last place that you did a PNG save. So I'm going to, sorry, I just got to move my, I can't seem to get the Zoom thing moved. So I'm going to save it here, and hopefully that will work. Okay, so now it should appear as a PNG file here somewhere. There it is. So now we've got a PNG file. So now we're going to go back into the editor, and I can actually make a different background if I want it. So what I'm going to show you is how to make a background with any image. So we're getting out of this softened skin one. Okay. So this is the original photo. So we're just going to use that as a background. So you just go into the Insert tab, and we're going to use this fill box here. And then I'm just going to drag to the corner. And you can see that the last time I was in here, I was using that color. Say I want a pattern or something like that. So let's put a pattern in it. If you want to change, make something look like wallpaper or whatever you want. There's all sorts of different things you can choose from. So I'll go with the stars here. Okay, so that's going to be my background. So I'm just going to, I don't need all the details, so I'm just going to save that as a background. Okay. So now we're going to go back into, well, we don't have to. I'll just stay right here, actually. So now what we're going to do is drag in my PNG file. Because we're in insert mode, it will layer it over at the top. And because I have the transparent background, it's going to make that background my new background. So it's like we were sitting in a room that had that wallpaper in the back. So if at any time you want to get rid of that type of background, you can. Now, in this instance, it wasn't too critical. It wasn't the worst background in the world. But let's bring that other photo in that I was talking about now. So we'll go back out to edit. And we'll go into cutout, so I'll bring it in there. So now let's see what it would do with this, because I hate to show an easy example, and then when you go try and do it, it doesn't work. So there's green, so it's going to take the green. I'm going to give it just a little more tolerance and have it, because my hair isn't green. But you can see, you can do Control Z in this program, but you can see there's so many shades of green, it's hard for it to do big chunks. Because we've got the window panes, and then we've got pinks, and all this stuff. So typically what I do on this type of image is I will go close to my head, the face, and then I paint the rest with that brush that I showed you. So we'll just get in tight, because there's all these little colors, because it's the little edges that are hard. So we'll do there, and then we'll just touch up with my hair later if need be. We'll hit that green because my hair isn't green. Okay, and then we're going to do the white. We'll do the green. We'll do more white. This green. And that's pretty good. We could leave that part in the back, actually. I'll have the chair. So basically, I need to now erase all this other stuff and fix my hair. So we'll go into the brush. And we're going to clean up the edge of my hair, and then we're going to just use this big brush now that we've got pretty good edging. Slip in here a little bit, but the other ones, I've got that tightness already done, so it's a lot easier. It didn't give me as much as I wanted, but yeah, so just go around and fill this in as best you can. Yeah, you can do a neater job. So I'm just sort of showing you what it's like. Pretty easy to clean up. And just be careful by the hair. Hair is always problematic, and especially with little kids. It ends up being very wispy. So I do take some time on that typically. Okay, that'll be good enough. You get the idea. So now we've got this another PNG image. So we're going to save that. See where it saves it this time. Okay. So we'll save that. And then what we're going to do, I'm not going to replace the background. I want the same background. So let's invert this. Well, we don't have to actually. You can invert this. And then you've got this background. But what I'm going to do is I'm just, instead of doing that and taking the background separate, I'm going to go back to edit. I'm just going to use this photo, and I'm going to go into the blur function. And I'm going to blur the whole photo. So however much I want that background blur, it could be something like that. So you can still see it's a garden and everything. But just a little soft background. Okay, now I go into insert. And I'm going to pull in me and focus. Oh, I forgot to hit apply. Sorry about that. Back up. All right, let's start again. Blur. Okay, we'll do the blur. Oops, too much. Try that one. Hit apply. Okay, now we go into insert. And now I'll bring in the sharp meat, and then you just drag it so it lines up. So now I've got, you know, me in focus, but a nice softer background. I kind of like that. Okay, so Chris, any questions on this?
There are tons of questions, actually, but how much more have you got? And then maybe we'll save all the questions and do them all at once.
Okay. I have the red eye I was going to show. And there's lots more examples I can show. But and I wanted to show how to make a collage. So why don't I do the red eye? And then before I go on to collage, maybe we'll save some questions. Okay. Yeah. So let's go back to edit, and we're going to pull in a new image. Don't want to save that. So very, you know, typical back in the time when we had these flashes and that, every color photo I have of myself, it seems, had red eyes. This is Chris's niece. So this is a very easy fixing red eye. Just click on that. We're going to zoom in. And you don't have to, you get a brush size. You don't have to be exact because it's only going to look for something red. Well, even if I made that bigger, that part of her iris is not red. So just make sure it's at 100%. And then when you click on it, it's just going to make a nice dark pupil and you're done. Okay? And then obviously this is one where you might want to, you know, just do a little spot removal on acne or whatever. Again, it probably would do a fine job in AI, but it might end up not looking like Dana. So I'll just give you the warning on that. Okay, so the other thing that was kind of cool, I'll just, seeing as how we have time, I'll just show this. This is an old photo of my great aunt, and it's kind of a nice a little way. You could maybe put a vignette on it. It's already got a partial vignette, so I might just add a vignette like that. So that's the size of the vignette. This is the amount of how much you want in the shadow and then how big it is. And then you can have white if you want. So white is sometimes nice in some of these older photos too, especially babies or brides, things like that. It can add a nice little soft mood. But the black does tend to draw us in. So that's your main goal, but I wouldn't make it too big. And then the other thing you can do is do a color fill. So say I just want to color that rose. You know how they used to sort of paint certain areas of the black and white negatives. So this is a little more advanced, and I don't think I have notes on it in your handouts. But say I choose a color like, say, a yellow. I don't really like these yellows. Let's go with a red rose. All right. And then I'm going to go normal, and I'm going to do a mask. And I'm just going to paint that area. And the reason it's red is because the mask is red, but I've also made the rose red. There's a lot of red. So you can play around with that kind of thing and just add some color, pops of color to a black and white image if you wanted to. So you can get quite creative. Okay. What else do I have here? Some of these other ones I have covered, but I'm going to cover them again. Just because you can use them on photos. The photos I'm going to show you are color and more modern, but I want to show you the tools. So I don't think it really matters. It's not an old photo. Okay, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to drag this photo in. And one of the tools that is handy to use in this photo editor, because when you scan photos, sometimes there's very dark areas, but there's also light areas, and you don't want the light areas to blast it out, and you don't want the dark areas any darker for sure. So a very handy button in this program. I'll show you what I would do before I learned to use this button. I would go into color, and I would say light and shadows because I really can't see this guy well enough, okay? But then that took a lot of the color out of my dawn sky. So, okay, let's darken highlights. So I would darken the highlights. But see what happens when I do that? You get this halo effect on the edge of the trees, and that's not good. I don't like that. So what I realized is there was an easier way of doing this that actually did a better job. So let's cancel this. The other thing I meant to show you is you can, this compare button that I've been showing you before, some of the sub programs have the compare button like a vertical line. So you can do that dragging across and seeing if you're getting the effect you want. Okay, just to mention that. So let's cancel this. And we're going to use instead this HDR button, which stands for high dynamic range. So basically it's saying we recognize your image has these areas that are quite bright and these areas that are quite dark, and we don't want to brighten your bright areas and we want to lighten your dark areas. So we want to even it out more. So we're going to hit that HDR and it's going to make a decision what I want. Now I can adjust it. I can adjust the amount. It usually adds some vibrance, which I don't always like, but there's various things you can adjust. But the main thing is there's no halos. So how did they do it? And I couldn't do it with their subphone. So, you know, this software is like that. So it did a way better job. So anytime you have images like that, I would start out with this button. If you don't like it and you can't adjust to it to your liking, then by all means, go into the color lighting tab. But it's not a bad place to start. And frankly, most of my images now, I will start there. Because you can't lose. There are auto ones in here as well, and you can try them, auto color, auto levels, auto contrast, but if you don't like them, I want you to know how to do them yourself. That's why I don't tend to teach them. But by all means, use them. I'm not against using them. What time are we now? Okay, let's go on just to do the collage. Oh, no, Chris, what questions do you have?
We can do a few of them, yeah. Some were just comments. Alan German said, consider doing family storage audits where family members review, share, and store their photographs. A fun activity with long-term benefits. Good idea to share your originals. Natalie said it's important to date photos and list who's in them if you can. She was given old negatives of family, had prints made, couldn't identify some of the people. Older relatives who could guide me are no longer living. Tom pointed out that Affinity Photo Editor now belongs to Canva, is free.
Yep.
It's a much more involved photo editor. It's got a long
Longer learning curve. I'm not ready to teach Affinity. It is a great piece of software, and it is free. So if you are more advanced, by all means, give it a try. But it is a slightly longer learning curve.
Okay. And Karen asked if you're using paid or free AI, and I answered already that you're using the free version of Gemini.
Now, whether or not it stays free forever, we don't know. Chris told me these companies are losing money head over fist, so we'll
big
see.
Time. Yeah. Tom points out that as well as using a scanner, you could always use a good camera or phone to take picture of a picture and then edit the result.
Yep.
Steve Parker asked about adjustment layers, so I answered that. Photoscape X doesn't have the concept of adjustment layers.
True, and Affinity does. So again, if you are not knowledgeable enough and you're looking for free software, Affinity might be the way to go. They do a lot with layering.
Yeah. Karen asked if you use a special kind of mouse or a pen for the fine editing work.
I do not, but Chris, there's Wacom. Chris has used that for some of his fine editing. I have a roller bar mouse, which I find, I have it for other reasons, but I find it very good for photo editing because I can make very, very subtle movements.
But anybody who has a laptop with a pen, definitely you could use a pen to do your fine editing work.
Yeah.
That's definitely an option. Natalie asked if there's a guide in the program to explain what all the options are and under which main menu. I think the only thing you have is that section of the videos, right?
Yes, the section with the videos here, but also don't forget YouTube. Like, you know, I go into YouTube and say, you know, there's people who made YouTubes on Photoscape X, so just say, how do I do this in Photoscape X? And I'm pretty sure it won't be as many videos as if it was Photoshop or something like that, but probably you will find what you need, or you can give me a call.
Okay.
But the handout that I gave you the link to is not super comprehensive, but hopefully it will get you started.
Okay, I think second last question. Natalie said, is it important to or is it best to copy or import a copy and edit it and then save that, less chance of overwriting the original.
Yeah, I don't have my original anywhere near my Photoscape. My Photoscape X opens up, my originals are way in another folder. So if I forget to do a save as, I'm not copying over my original. It doesn't take up that much space. I just make a complete copy of all the originals into a working folder area, and then I start playing around with them. And, it happens.
And when you're saving, are there file formats to choose from or only PNG?
Let me just cancel out of this. So if I'm saving this, you can do a save as you can do a PNG, you can do all these file formats, but so you can choose whatever you want, but I'm not sure what the advantages would be to do a PNG if you don't have any kind of transparent background. But that's up to you. Yeah. If you're used to PNGs, then fine.
In most cases, people are using JPEGs for sure.
Yeah.
PNG is the one use for that you have to do is when you want a transparent background.
Yeah.
So when you're doing those cutout functions, and when you do a save from the cutout function, it defaults to doing it in a PNG.
It forces you.
Yeah.
So when we were in that cutout, let's go back to the cutout. Sorry, I'm just got to get rid of the Zoom stuff. Just click again. All right, so in this section, when I do a save, it will automatically give that PNG. I could save it as a JPEG, but there'd be no advantage because, you know, that background would just come out with black, I guess. Hey, Chris, or what would?
Yeah, it would be probably white, actually.
Okay.
It would just be white.
So it will force you to save PNG. Just realize it doesn't necessarily put it in the folder you are working in. So
another thing that's neat is you see under the file name, it actually, when you do a cutout, it automatically adds in the -cutout.png for
right.
you. You can overwrite that if you want, but it's kind of neat that it takes the original file name, adds cutout.png, saves it as that, and it does that for you. The last question we have here is from Susan. Do you have a preferred sharing platform? For example, Google Photos, Flickr, et cetera.
Yeah, I tend to use a Flickr. It's not the easiest one. I teach how to organize your photos. I have a lecture on how to organize your photos. So I do go through Google Photos, and I don't tend to use Google Photos a lot because I want to keep my space on Google. Google Drive, it includes my Gmail, includes my dance videos I post and all that. So I kind of keep my space there and don't waste it on photos. So I use the free Flickr. You're only allowed about, I think it's 1,000 images.
Yep.
So that's one trip, but that's fine. Once people have looked at my trip, they're not going to look at it again. So I just haul them down, clear that off, and put up a new album. So I tend to use Flickr. It's a slightly longer learning curve. It's not as easy as Google or Instagram or something like that, but it gives me more power. I like the power I have with Flickr. I can caption things easily. I can rearrange things. I just like how it's set up. And then, of course, you can share your albums from there with anyone. So that's probably my preferred choice at this point in time, but there's plenty of options. It's more, you know, what suits you best. So if you're not using Google Drive or if you want to pay, that's fine. And then you don't have to worry about space.
Yeah, Susan mentioned this, specifically sharing with family. It has all the old family photos. You might end up running into that 1,000 image limit.
Yes.
So that is the limit on free accounts.
Yeah, you have to just sort of say, folks, it's going to be up there for 2 months. Get them if you want them. And then, you know, I get rid of them. So, yeah, it's basically, but the paid, I had the paid version for 1 year, and it didn't cost me very much, but I just realized I wasn't utilizing the capacity it had for the paid. So if your family's willing to kick in for a year or two to help pay for it, then you've got pretty much unlimited storage, I think.
Yeah. Kabahan has a question. I love questions like this. How does Photoscape X compare to Photoshop and Lightroom?
it is, all I can say is I've seen, you know, the other ones, and they have all have very similar functions for certain things. They're all going to do things slightly differently, and Photoshop and Lightroom are going to have more advanced features like the layering and stuff like that. But it's a longer learning curve, and they're charging you every month. So it's whatever, if it's a serious hobby for you and you're photo editing, I photo edit probably 3 times a week, and I've been doing this for 10 years, and I'm yet to be discouraged very often with the capacity of Photoscape X. It's not going to have any new improvements. They aren't upgrades. You're not going to all of a sudden have more AI features in this. So if you're looking for that, then another type of software would be better. As I say, I use the On1 Photo Raw. It's much more advanced, but you only pay once for it, or once every few years if you want to upgrade. But basically, it's not a monthly subscription, so I like On1 Photo Raw for that. But Lightroom and Photoshop are probably the two most common ones in our club. So if you're part of a club and you want to ask your fellow club member, how do I do this in Lightroom, they'll be able to answer it. You know, whereas I can't because I don't use it enough. I use it only to sort of be aware of what's there. And I'm part of a critique group and they use it. And so I'm familiar with some of the functions. And some of them are functions for sure are better than what's in here, especially if you're getting into AI stuff. It really, some of them are just doing an amazing job of, you know, when you want to get rid of a garbage can or something like that, you can do all sorts of areas of your image and it will realize what you want in an incredible way. Chris and I saw a couple of examples of this, I guess, last month at the Photo Club, and it was kind of mind-blowing with the AI. It wasn't just like body race, like where it's looking at pixels around the area. It's looking at your whole photo and deciding what you probably wanted. But be careful with AI because I don't like it bringing in anything from the internet. So I don't want it to bring in a flower I didn't have. If I'm just cloning a flower from another part of the stem and I want another flower over on the left, that's fine. That's up to me to make that decision. But I don't like it bringing in pixels that aren't mine. And that's the rule of our photo club. You can use AI providing it's using your pixels in your image. The minute you bring in a new background, like I was showing you those wallpaper-type backgrounds, that would not be allowed in our club if you were going to enter a competition because yeah. They're not your pixels.
It's strictly in competition venues. If you're doing it for yourself, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, if you take a picture of the wallpaper and you know, you take a picture of the sky and you combine it, that's allowed in our club for sure. It's a composite. And you can do that with Photoscape X. You just, you know, so like if I want to use this sky, I'd chop out that sky and layer it in behind my mother or something. And that's perfectly allowed because I took a picture of the sky and I took a picture of my mother. So.
Susan points out Photoshop Elements is not a monthly one. No, it's a 3-year one. It used to be a perpetual license for Photoshop Elements. It's now a 3-year license is what you're buying. So after 3 years, it stops functioning unless you pay up. So that's
I'm not against people spending money on these things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's their hobby. It's just if you want to figure out whether or not you want to learn that much, try this because, you know, it's going to be similar functions and probably similar ways of doing it. Or, you know, if you're brand new, it's try Windows Photos and then it's right in your Windows setup. But then you will realize where the limitations are and then go find something that suits your needs. But, no, there's nothing wrong with paying. It's just I don't want you to pay and then realize, not really, you know, I'm not really editing much. Or I'm just doing cropping and very basic lighting adjustments, and you're paying for all these functions you may never use.
Yeah. Bob G says he has a family group photo that becomes lighter, overexposed on the right side. Is there a way to add a shadow in a gradient? I understand what he wants. I think it would be really, really tricky. Photoscape X does have, rather than just a straight brush, you can actually do gradients in your masking. But it would be really, really tricky to get that looking at all natural.
It is hard. There is some gradients you can do when you mask. So say we go into color fill and I'm doing a mask, I can use this type of mask. Okay, so you have that gradient effect, and so I can put a new color in. So I've got this red in, and then I can adjust how much red I want. So if you're trying to fill in a hole, you have to sort of use the mask. But it's hard. If I was just going to use this, well, you've got this kind of mask as well. But if I'm just using a masking brush, and say I wanted to say this area was all blasted out, it was pure white, and I'm trying to make it not white. That's fine. I can put in, say, a very pale color that's not quite pure white, but I can't really do a gradient on the circle like that. You'd have to use, you know, this kind or this kind. And with a color fill, it's not really as doable. So it's a little harder.
Okay, maybe we could actually go on to your collage part.
Okay, all right. So, as I say, the idea of the collage is that maybe you would want to print this and frame it and put it on your wall. So I can use this collage function up here on the main menu tab, and then you just say, okay, I've got three photos, and it will give you some suggested layouts. I find them awkward because then when I go find my three photos that I want, say I'm going to put in, I got three waterfall photos, let's try that. So I can put the waterfall photos in, but they might not really match the layouts that they have. And you can only move them left and right. I can't move it up and down. So I find it very restricting and and again, I'm trying to pull it down and I can't. So I don't tend to use these. If they work for you, great. But I tend to create my own collages, and I'll show you how to do that. So basically what you're doing, let's go back to editor. Basically what you're doing is you're going to start with a background. So let me see if let's just make a plain background. So let's bring in let's go in collage. Maybe I have a plain. So I make a plain background, and as I showed you before, you can make it with any image just going into insert and dragging over. So let's have this blue background. What's this one? Oh, maybe pink. Okay, and then as you saw, there was a little frame on that one. You can add a little frame if you want or not. If you're going to be framing it yourself, maybe not. But if you're just going to stick it up on a wall with thumbtacks or something, like I used to do these for seniors' outings, and then I just put it up on their bulletin board, so it was kind of nice to have a little framing. And then you go into insert mode, and now you can drag in whatever photos you want. So let's just drag in three of these flowers here, and then you can just size them. So say I want to do a collage of, you know, these three flowers. You can size them. You can overlap them however you want. You can sort of specify, say you wanted this one in the back and this one in the front. Just go over here, and you can say bring to front. Okay? So you can move them around. Now, typically what I do is if I want them to be framed individually, I do that before I bring them in, and I'll show you why. So I can frame them here. So I'm just going to put a little frame on this. It's a polka dot frame. Let's go with a solid color, black. And that's fine. It did a good job. But if I decide, oh, I want to move that a little to the left, I have to move the frame too. That's a pain in the neck. So typically what I do, I'm going to start again. Get rid of these. I will typically frame them before I go in. So we've got this. Let's just save this background. And then we're going to go back to edit, and I'm going to bring these photos in just to frame them individually. So I'm going to put a little frame on this. I'm just going to do a border, and the one I like is, I think, this one. So, and then I can change how much of that border. I want a really thin border, okay? And then I want to choose the color. I don't want white. I want black. So you can see that. Okay, so now I can say apply. I can save that. I'm going to save it a different name here. So that's framed. Okay, but the cool thing is, I don't know why it made it look like that.
You're on the shadow of frame.
Oh, I was on a shadow one. Okay, let's do that again. I got the wrong one. See if I can back up on that one. Cancel. All right. Let's bring this one in again. Oh, yeah, it was a shadow. Okay, so it must be this one. Oh, it's been a long time since I've done these.
I think it's on the top right. That one.
Straightforward. Okay, so we'll go down skinny again. Nothing wrong with shadow if you want it, but just make it hard. Okay, so we're going to apply that, and we're just going to save that over the top. And then if I bring in another one and I go frame it, it remembers what I had. So it's really fast to do them all. Okay, so I'm just going to do them all. Bring this one in, hit frame, hit apply, and all three are done. So now I go and find my pink background. We're going to hit insert. Yeah, we're already in insert. Okay. And then we'll bring in the frame images. Oh, I got a border on this pink one. That's fine. Make that smaller. Yeah, so you just decide where you want them. So if it's a face, I'll show you one I've done with faces and you can get the idea. Overlap with whatever you wish. And then, of course, you can add, I'm going to bring that one forward. Bring to front. And then, you know, you can position them however you wish. And then you can insert text and choose to move that around. Put the color you want, so a little black so you can see it, and then the font you want, whatever you may wish. And then the size, you can just, if you're only doing one, you can just drag the size to what you want. If you're going to do multiple ones, you might want to actually put in a specific number so you can make them the same on each of your, what? So this one is basically just, you just type in what you want. Okay. And I've done these for a few people for celebrations of life where people want to have a picture with a collage made of, you know, photos of the person they're trying to remember, etc. So, you know, you've got lots of space to do all sorts of things. So I just wanted to show you a couple of examples of ones I've done just so you get the idea. So let's go back to edit and it will replay. So this was one I did of an outing of a seniors group. So just the kind of thing I would put on the wall. And then this one was one that I did on Remembrance Day. So I actually had this photo and then I put a filter on it and made it look like that. And then I had this cutout background, and then I had this photo was from another photo where I cut out just the peony, and then I layered them in. So that's what I posted on Facebook on Remembrance Day. This was one that when my great niece was born, so or you know, shortly after she was born. So just a little collection of family images. And so they, you know, and it's just to print it and put it on their fridge. I wasn't expecting them to frame or anything. But I make these often for my family. And they just put them on their fridge for a few months. Maybe it was their last trip or whatever. And it's just kind of fun. This was a trip to St. Albert. This was the Tulip Festival. This was a wedding. Trish's niece. So you can see she grew up and into a beautiful woman. And then other ones like that. This is another wedding one. And then here's one where I like the picture, so I ended up taking out the ears because I didn't want the rabbit ears in the photo, and I just put in a different wallpaper background. So you get the idea. Okay, I think that's...
We have a challenge if you're up for it. Well, you know that photo of the boat that you did HDR on? What would happen if we took that photo and we put it into Gemini and just said, improve the photo?
Probably it would do a fine job.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what it does.
Yeah, so this, I just want to make sure I've got, so it's this one here.
That's the one, yeah.
And you want to say, lighten the shadows and darken.
I would just say improve the photo and see what it does. So let's see what Gemini will do for that.
Good.
Oh, you got to do your upload.
I know. Okay. It took me ages not to always put in please. I still can't do it sometimes, but I'll do it tonight. So then you just add a file. You upload your file. So I'll have to find it here. OBCUG.
Let's see what it does.
Yeah, it does. It'll take a couple of minutes. Well, maybe a minute or two, but I'm sure it'll do a fine job. But if you're not specific, and you can always go back in and then say more and say, okay, I didn't mean that. What I really wanted was, or, you know, make that person even brighter, or just lighten his hair, but not as, I mean, you can just talk to it and tell it all sorts of things. But just saying improve this photo, it'll be interesting to see what it does, because I haven't really given it any instructions.
Yeah.
All right. So there's the image. So
yeah, it doesn't look like it did that much.
It has lightened the highlights. You can see the boat better, and you can see the gentleman better, and it has kept that sky. It's actually darkened the sky and emphasized it, saturated a bit. So
try downloading it and then bring it up, and and let's see. If you just click on the top, where it says download in the top right corner, just click it there, that'll open it up.
But it doesn't take me where I was. So anyway, what happens is it makes these decisions. So if I decide that that sky is just way darker than I wanted or nowhere near what it looked like, it's a little harder to undo it. But and you can see even they seem to have – I'm just going to zoom in a bit. I can't really get it.
Yeah, you can. Just do the drop down on the toolbar where it says 113.8.
So where are you?
Where it says 113.8 on the toolbar. On the toolbar right.
Sorry, I just got the zoom thing in the way.
Oh, okay.
I just
make it 200, yeah.
It seems there's a little bit of haloing, but not bad.
But yeah, it is very much you're handing it over to them. Like they might do a fantastic job, they might not.
And you can go back in and say, okay, now make that sky a little less dark, or whatever you wish, or lighten the gentleman's clothing a little more, or the boat. It's just if you don't like what they did, this lecture is to show you how you can do it yourself. That's the main reason. I'm sure. For a lot of you, it will be easier to at least start with AI, and nothing wrong with that. But it's when you get stuck. And as I say, I didn't know this guy. If they changed his face at all, I don't care. He was just a stranger. But if that was my dad or something, then I would care if they changed his face. So just be wary if you're putting a face up there.
And Tom, Control Plus doesn't zoom in when you're in Urban View. And Control minus with.
I was using that F, like usually you hit F, but I guess maybe it doesn't work.
The only other comment that I think we've had before we wrap it up here is just Alan commented when looking at different photo editing packages, if you want lots of features but a very steep learning curve at zero cost is the GIMP, the new image manipulation program.
Yes.
So, free and multi-platform. But it's definitely got a steep learning curve on it.
But it is a good one, for sure.
Yeah, okay. So
Affinity or GIMP, if you already know a little bit about photo editing, you're willing to watch a few videos and that, it may take you further. I find this takes me 90% of the way, but there's certain times that I will go into On One because it's just not quite what I want to be able to do.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I think that we can wrap it up now. We are at 9:00, so I would like. Let me just. I said everybody would have the opportunity if they wanted. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to mute all and allow people to unmute themselves. So and you'll have to unmute yourself, Linda. So if anybody wants to unmute themselves and ask a question or make a comment. Feel free to do so, and just while people are thinking about that, I would like to extend my thanks on behalf of the entire group to Linda for a fantastic demonstration and explanation on how you can bring some of these old photos to life. And so thanks very much for your time and effort, Linda. Much appreciated.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. Do you ever print these out? This is Carol.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as I say, I print them in the little collages and that and put them on my fridge or whatever. But mostly I'll put the old photos into photo books. That's typically what I do. And then they're safe and they're, you know, great gifts and not too expensive. So why wait for sales?
Thanks.
My wife does them all the time for the grandkids' birthday. And then I get the collage and I hang it on my wall of fame.
Excellent. Excellent. That's great.
Yeah, the collages are neat.
They are. They're fun. And you don't think of them as necessarily lasting forever, but they, you know, you keep them, you tuck them away, bring out another one.
Okay, lots of kudos in the chat for you. I'll pass on the chat for you later on. So for the benefit of everybody, the slide deck that Linda had, that will be going up on our website under past presentations, as well as the audio track from tonight and the contents of the chat window will go out there. And also she's got posted a quick guide on using Photoscape X. So there's another PDF file that'll give you some hints on functionality. So that'll be going up there as well. And I don't see anything else in the chat that is requiring your feedback or anything like that. So once again, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks.